Good morning, everybody. My name's Larry Jacobs. This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio on the 19th of July, 2022. Welcome to today's show, which is going to be with some good friends from the Council for Exceptional Children. It's all about the recent advocacy event, Legislative Summit. All right, we've got three folks from there, Caitlin, Sharon, and Kuna, and they're going to be talking to us about different aspects of what was going on with special education advocacy. And as I have said here a million times, I love it when the feds in the states tell special ed teachers they mandate all this stuff and then don't give them the money to do it, okay, which really ticks me off, if I do say so myself. I'll say that right at the beginning of the show. So we're going to talk about this in detail with our good friends from CEC, the Council for Exceptional Children. We'll archive this show, just like we always do, at ace-ed.org. That's ace-ed.org, ace-ed.org. And over there, you'll find our you can link over to our magazine. Just click on the cover, which is Equity and Access Pre-K-12. We're putting together our back-to-school issue, but the current issue is up there right now. Just click on the cover. You'll see it over at ace-ed.org. Our awards program, Excellence in Equity, is winding down, but there's still time to do nominations. That's on the awards icon. All right, then we have our SEL Resource Center, Social Emotional Learning, which is seltoday.org. Okay, and then also our new site, teacher-retention.com. We're very concerned about this educator shortage, and I just got a newsletter today, okay, that said that, I think it was from CASE, the Council of Administrators of Special Education, that it's all hands on deck, all right, because there is such a shortage of special education teachers. I guess we can talk about that today, too. So teacher retention, teacher recruitment, teacherretention.com, all linked at ace-ed.org. Please check it all out. We work hard to get you a lot of information in every area. And I've got my desk here. I'm going to start with Kuna. And Kuna, am I pronouncing your name properly?
Yep.
Good. There you go. Okay. And mine's L-A-R-R-Y. Larry, welcome to the show, Kuna Davalin. Okay. Who's the Senior Policy and Advocacy Advisor at CEC. All right. Then Sharon, good morning to you, Sharon Walsh.
Good morning, Larry. Thank you for inviting us.
You are always welcome here, and please don't hesitate to take me up on that invitation. You're the government relations consultant, so I imagine you're bald from tearing your hair out. Would that be correct?
Some days, for sure.
Completely
yes.
Bald lady. Okay. That's for early childhood special education. Wow, it's so tough. Okay. And Caitlin, you there, Caitlin Brennan?
I'm here, Larry. Thanks for having
us. No problem with a nicer head of hair, I'm sure, because you don't have to deal with the government all the time. Okay? The Higher Education Consortium for Special Education. You're going to explain that to us, et cetera. And I guess we can start right there. This is key stuff. Caitlin, let's start right there. Okay? Caitlin, you just had the legislative summit for CEC, okay? And you are... Well, actually, I'll start with Kuna. Kuna, okay? Explain that event, okay? The Special Education CEC Annual Advocacy Event Legislative Summit, okay? And just give us the quick overview. I'm going to start there. That's simpler. Go ahead.
Great. Thank you so much. And it's
You're
great
welcome.
To be here. Yeah, so
it's wonderful
our,
to have you, Kuna.
Thank you. Our Special Education Legislative Summit is really at its core a fly-in for grassroots advocates. The last 2 years, because of the pandemic, it's been virtual. So this was the first time in the last 3 years that we all came together in Washington, D.C., which was really exciting. We had a lot of great energy in the room because folks wanted to be here. They wanted to get back together. So we saw more than 200 advocates. They represented 45 states, and they came to learn about policy that is impacting them and their roles. These are all special educators, you know, from early interventionists to classroom teachers. We have professors, we have undergraduate students, we have school administrators, really runs the gamut of the special educator field. So they come to DC. We did some deep dives into these policy issues that are impacting special education.
Yep.
And then we also did some deep dives into strategies for effectively advocating specifically on Capitol Hill. So we did a lot of discussion around how to run an effective meeting, how to deliver your ask, how to really bring it home with a personal story so that you can pull on those heartstrings as well, because we know that's the real secret to getting folks' attention. That's right. That's right. The event culminated in the day of advocacy on Capitol Hill. We had a lot of meetings in person. Some offices are still not fully open, so there were some virtual meetings, but I think every state had at least one meeting on Capitol Hill. That gave folks the opportunity to meet with members of Congress and their legislative staff, share their experiences, draw their attention to federal policy impacting special education.
And let me ask you this before we get to your good colleagues there. What is their reaction? And it's probably, oh, yes, we really care, all this sort of stuff. But in reality, okay, what is their reaction to all this? Okay, I mean, yeah you know what I mean. Help me out here.
I do.
You know, it's easy to be a yes man or a yes lady. Yeah, and shake your head yes, okay, as the advocacy group comes in. But this stuff is important, all right? It really is important. Okay, it affects a lot of people. It affects a lot of voters, I might add. Okay, special ed parents specifically are, pretty adamant about voting and taking care of things. Okay, so what's the end result? When all's said and done, what happens? How do they react?
So you know, there's a pretty wide range of reactions on Capitol Hill. There are the folks who have their positions and they're sticking to them. There are the folks who don't know a lot about the issue and may just with a little more education start to really become advocates for special education. And then there are folks who have small opportunities to impact change. They may not, you know, jump on board with fully funding IDEA, for example, but there may be places where they see our point and can lean in a little bit more and do something. We encounter a lot of members and staff who have family with disabilities.
That's interesting.
Who
yep.
are teachers, yep. you know. So there's a lot of relatability. And again, that's why that storytelling is so important,
yes.
not just bringing forward facts and data, because those stories are what really show members and their staff that this is an issue that actually does impact them as well.
It really does. And I must ask this in this crazy world we live in. Do you find there's a lot of – is there like bipartisan support? Does it matter if you're talking to a Republican or a Democrat? Can they see that they need to work together on this kind of stuff?
Yeah. IDEA has historically been a bipartisan issue. I'll say that it's really hard to get both parties to talk to each other right now in this very polarized environment. But just as kind of an example, the IDEA full funding bill in the House is bipartisan, and there's double digit showing from the Republicans and over 100 Democrats on that bill. So in an atmosphere like this, I would say that's really strong bipartisan support.
That's good. That's good. I would hate to think that special education is a partisan thing. I almost refuse to believe that. It's too nuts to even think about. And one last question I'm going to ask Sharon, and I swing to her in a second. Okay, Kuna, when you were all said and done, did you feel good about it? That you really accomplished something good?
I felt great. We did a debrief after the Hill Day, and folks, the room was buzzing. Folks were excited.
Good.
They wanted to come back. They wanted to go home and do some advocacy at the state level. It was really great.
Wow, that is great. That's nice to hear. Sharon, okay, Sharon Walsh, who's the government relations consultant, okay, I already said that. Okay, Division for Early Childhood, that's key. Okay, I love it. Okay, let's hear what your experience was. You gave information to the what was the information you gave them, and how was your feeling about the feedback?
Thanks, Larry. You know, it really comes back to our role as members, both of CEC and the individual divisions like Division for Early Childhood, and we have 17 other divisions. You mentioned PACE, because our role is to bring forward those stories and the data to the members in our delegation, and really the ones they want to talk to are are those of us in their delegation. So I live in Virginia. That's where you have to focus your efforts. But I think it's important to keep in mind that, we, believe it or not, Larry, we're approaching in the next couple of years the 50th anniversary of IDEA. And so, IDEA is that long. But all that time, IDEA is always meant to be a partnership with the Congress. And that partnership was always meant to fund in support of state and local efforts, local school districts, local programs, to make the services available to children and students birth to 21, because we have efforts under birth to 3 for children and families under the early intervention program, and we have efforts for 3 through 21 for children, and then as students get older into school age, for those children with disabilities. And full funding all those efforts, as you know, costs an incredible amount of money.
Yes,
and the burden
does.
For that has often been left to state and local taxpayers and other sources of programs. And, you know, I think if you think originally IDEA was about access, open the door, let the children in, but we have so far exceeded that, because now it's really not the access, because that's a given, but it's the emphasis on opportunity, success, positive results for each and every child, particularly those who've been underserved. We have a huge focus right now on equity, making sure that we have fully inclusive opportunities for all students and children. So I think if we keep focusing our member efforts on the fact that IDEA federal funding has never kept pace with the promises we've made, but our job is to keep pushing for that. Yeah, as you said, Larry, it's hard to believe people don't support that. Many people support it, but then say we don't have the money, which, of course, our job is not to find the money for them. Our job is really just to tell them what's needed. And I think we do a good job of
that. All they have to do is cancel one aircraft carrier. The admirals tell them they don't even need it. Okay, it's that simple. All right, that simple.
Well,
one aircraft carrier,
funny.
We'll get a lot done. And we'll call it the SS Sharon Walsh. I'm happy to do that.
And Larry, I like how you say that. You certainly can tell them that. One of the things at CELS leadership training we learn is that it's not our job to tell them what not to fund. It's our job to tell them what we need to make these programs successful.
Yeah.
And
but
so,
they
and that's hard because you're right.
Yeah,
and it's their job to figure out where the money comes from. So
I get it with, you know, the defense budget. That's always popular. But that's an employment plan, okay? Even the admirals, the generals are telling me we don't need all this stuff, okay? And the wind-up of it is they wind up giving it away to police departments and stuff, okay? Which that works out in the end, kind of. But my point is, you know, we got to look at reallocating this stuff. All right, and the more money we put into this stuff, and we're going to talk about this in a minute, ladies and audience, the more we can add the teacher compensation, because that's another challenge we've got here, which we haven't even touched on yet. Okay, it's getting
and
teachers. We've got to pay them.
I know you want to get to that, but we stay focused on supporting the funding efforts. It's always a primary theme of all of our advocacy efforts, and we do it among the members of CEC. CEC has always taken the lead on this. And then we also do it across coalitions and other membership organizations that we work with that represent other divisions and other aspects of education. So I think it's a partnership effort, always has been, and that's our theme.
That's excellent. And I want to ask you, since you brought up the great state of Virginia just as an example, because you're from there, do you find, Sharon, that people are advocating at their state government level as well? How important is that in terms of dollars and needs?
Yeah, so essential. Well, first of all, the primary funding sources for all of these efforts are state and local. So it is critical. And as Kuna said, that was part of the emphasis at CELS, particularly that last morning, to focus efforts on, you know, you're here, you advocate federally, you do it all year round, not just at the meeting in July.
Yeah.
But then when you go home, your efforts need to also be directed to your state government and your local government. So I need to spend, as a member, I need to spend as much time sending letters and calling Richmond phone numbers as I do the numbers in the county board of supervisors where I live, because it's all a joint partnership effort and we all have a role there.
Yeah, and one other thing, I noticed you're a government relations consultant, Sharon, for the Department of Early Childhood at CEC. Are you a special ed teacher, or what are you in particular? Are you a consultant?
It's a great question. A great question. Right now I'm a consultant, and I do some of my work around this area that you are calling governmental relations, and that's where I advocate and help support the members of our division to know, kind of as Kuna was saying, what to say, how to say it, what your talking points are, how to tell the story. But I am a special ed teacher. Started off as a preschool special ed teacher in a local school district, and then worked to help support people through professional development and teacher training. But I can't say enough about the importance of teachers and the value we need to add to, and as you talked about, the shortages and the funding of teachers. And I know we have a lot to talk about there with that as well.
And we're going to. It's really interesting. By the way, I didn't tell all three of you, just so you know this. All special ed teachers go to heaven, just so you know that. Caitlin, did you know that?
Now I do.
Now you do.
I'm in a good place, Ben. I'm in a good place.
And please send me a postcard. You know the address. Send me a postcard. Okay. Kuna, did you know that? I just want to make that clear. Special ed teachers. I don't know. I was a teacher, and you folks have the patience of saints is all I can tell you. Right? It's really cool what you all do. And before I go to Caitlin, Kuna, do you work for CEC or you're an advisor? What is your role?
I work for CEC, and my specialty is actually really focused on policy and advocacy. So I interface with the Department of Education and Capitol Hill, and also with our membership when it comes to, strengthening their own advocacy efforts.
Wow, cool. This is all great. You ladies are really something. Caitlin, you are a policy advisor. We're going to ask you the same question for the Higher Ed Consortium, which sometimes we forget about. Okay, and also I love this, the Teacher Education Division of CEC. Do you work directly for CEC? Are you an employee of CEC? Are you an advisor? Caitlin Brennan, also going to have it.
Thanks, Larry. I'm a consultant for the Teacher Education Division for CEC and for the Higher Ed Consortium for Special Ed. So similarly to what Kuna and Sharon just said, I think our roles overlap and interface a lot. The three of us are in communication a good bit. From the Higher Ed Consortium Special Ed, my members are institutions of higher education who have a doctoral program in special education. So really looking at rebuilding and diversifying that pipeline from higher ed through, practitioners. And then the Teacher Ed Division of CEC is focused on, rebuilding and diversifying the special educator and specialized instructional support personnel pipeline.
So you're the person I'm going to ask, how are we doing on all that?
Not great.
I know it's hard. I mean, one of the challenges to me with special ed, all right, is that particularly, a lot of school districts have grow your own. A kid loves English. They love their English teacher. They become an English teacher or a history teacher, whatever the case may be. Okay, but special ed is a little different than that. I never heard of the statistic, but you can have the greatest teacher in the world if you're special ed, but most of the kids will not be able to come back as a teacher. It's a whole different thing. Okay, we have to find people for special ed who are really, really in love with this, and a lot of people aren't even exposed to it. All right, it's a real challenge. Caitlin, there you go. There's your challenge. What's the answer? Ladies and gentlemen, Caitlin with the answer. There you go.
I think that's such a great point, and this definitely has there's shortages across the board, but the special education was the field with the greatest shortage, and this was even prior to the pandemic. I mean, this is going back to at least, 1978, but I think now it's in everybody's face. I mean, people, families have seen it throughout the pandemic. We see schools that are shifting to a 4-day school week or, will transition to days for online learning or, kids who are not receiving the services that they're entitled to under IDEA. I think, if you think about Sharon's point earlier and the importance of fully funding IDEA, if we don't have we need the people to run the programs too, right? And so And they're just not out there right now. So the pipeline of teachers is really insufficient. We have about 340,000 fewer students who are enrolled in teacher prep programs from 2019 compared with 2010. And
wow.
But we're seeing this decline in the number of special ed teachers who we have available to us. But at the same time, you know, we're seeing an increase in the number of students who receive special ed services.
It's crazy.
So, and it's not even by a little bit. I mean, there from 2010 to 2020, there was an increase of about 800,000 students. And so, you know, I think what you're seeing now and where these, you know, articles are really starting to pop up and it's, I think, getting a little bit more press is that the states and districts are having to react to the need, right? And they're doing it in a way that isn't sustainable and isn't what's best for the students, but they have to respond to an immediate need. So you saw the National Guard was called in. You've seen a lot of states are pulling on long-term substitutes and things. And, you know, especially for students who receive special ed services, it's a very specific skill set, and you need very specific training.
Yeah, I was just
going to
say, they're trying, but they're not trained. They don't know how to handle
exactly.
it. I wouldn't know how to handle it. You know, let me pose this. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Can you hear me? Yeah. Are any of the teacher education programs, let's say I was a history teacher, okay, are they including, okay, by any chance, how to work with special ed kids for every given teacher? Because there's a shortage of particularly special ed teachers. But the other teachers may be able to help out or at least do more in their classrooms if they have some training in it. Is there any thought to adding that to the traditional teacher route, teacher education route? Caitlin.
Yeah, and that's a great question. And in most states, gen ed teachers are required to take a special education course at least, but it's not across the board. There's still a handful of states that do not require that. And then the more and more that we see people who enroll in these alternative certification programs that don't have, you know, a quality student teaching or practicum experience or the coursework that's needed, you know, you might be able to pump out people, but you're not seeing, they turn over in the field faster than folks who go through a comprehensive prep program.
It's amazing. So what did you do with the, what did you, with the higher ed part of all this and the teacher ed part of all this, do with the legislative summit? What were the challenges? What were you advocating for?
Sure. So I think what we do is, you know, again, to the point earlier that Kuna made is the importance of bringing data in the stories. So I think what I try to do with members is share a lot of this data, and then they're the experts in the storytelling. I mean, this is their lives, right? So when you think about the impact of the shortage, having a special educator there who's able to say, you know, hey, I'm pulled from my caseload 3 days a week because of this shortage, and now my students aren't receiving the supports that they need. And, you know, just when we're thinking about special ed, it's a continuum. It's not just the special educator who's the key player. It's all of the folks along the line. So I think it was providing that data and, you know, and coupling that with folks' stories. And then, you know, we have, I think we can get into this in the minute, but there's certain federal levers that exist to help address this in a way that's sustainable. But as you mentioned, I think at the top, Larry, it's an all hands on deck. It's not
it really
just
is.
At the federal level, it's state and local, but for the purposes of the legislative summit, we are really looking at, you know, what are the federal levers we have available to us to address this?
Well, let's look at that question. What are the federal levers? What do you mean?
So I think, you know, when we think about this, it's real, you know, from my end, it's funding to support the critical programs to address the special educator and specialized instructional support personnel shortage. So that's, you know, you may hear those folks referred to as related service providers. But we look at IDEA Part D under personnel preparation. So this is a federal program that's dedicated to improving the special educator pipeline through, you know, comprehensive preparation of personnel. And that ranges from special educators, early interventionists, higher ed faculty, researchers, and so forth. So I'm I was funded under a personnel prep grant to get my doctorate, and there's just no way I would have been able to do that in at all, or have the knowledge I have now to do my job without that funding.
What's your doctorate in? What'd you get that?
Special ed.
Special education.
Yeah. And then just two other programs I'll touch on, Larry.
Go ahead.
Two other programs. So the Hawkins Center for Excellence, you know, our field has never been reflective of our country. And so we really need to focus on diversifying our pipeline in addition to rebuilding it. So the Hawkins Center's, you know, it's a grant program that provides support to teacher preparation programs at HBCUs and TCUs, so historically Black colleges and universities, tribal colleges and universities, minority-serving institutions. And that's a program that was just funded for the first time last year, and it's only funded at $8 million, so we really need a lot more funding there. And then And then looking at the Teacher Quality Partnership Program, so this is also a federal grant program that looks at improving the quality of educators. So again, like, it's not just good enough to have bodies in the room, but how do you ensure that those folks are prepared? So this, you know, couples the comprehensive coursework in institutions of higher ed with an intensive student teaching program under the supervision of like an expert mentor teacher. And we see a lot of really good outcomes there in terms of retention and folks staying in the field.
Boy, that would be great. And $8 million, that's three Army toilet seats and four hammers. Okay, it's nothing. I mean, you know, it makes you crazy. And I hate to say this, but it's the old Fram oil filter commercial. You can pay me now or you can pay me later. Okay? You can do it with the right dollars now, or it's going to cost you 10 times as much later. I mean, it's just absolutely unbelievable what's going on here. It just really is. When you walked away, Caitlin, let's continue. How'd you feel about what you accomplished on at Summit, at the event?
Yeah, I think it's what Kuna mentioned earlier. I mean, it's the members, right? I think to have folks come in and be excited about advocating and have the opportunity to share their stories, it's empowering. And, you know, they'll take that back to their colleagues, and hopefully, to Sharon's point earlier, also, you know, engage at their state and local level, because, you know, the skills that they learned to interface with the feds are similar kind of on a trickle down there. So, you know, I'm excited for the members and excited for the opportunities that we have there.
It's good. And somebody, I don't know if it was Sharon or Kuna, said 45 states showed up. Who was that?
Yeah, that was Kuna.
Mm-hmm. So Kuna, let me answer the dumbest question. Well, how come the other five states didn't show up? Where were they?
You know, we try to get as many as possible, and some folks just can't do it for whatever reason.
Well,
I think this year I was a little bit off, I think, because the pandemic isn't fully over, and, you know, some offices are just not doing meetings in person. 45 this year we were really pleased with.
Well, okay, that's good, and I'm glad you did get the 45. So all this said and done, have we, over the last few years, you guys do this, and I know it was virtual the last couple of years, but you've been doing this for years. Are you, I'll ask Kuna this. Kuna, are you seeing a difference? Okay, let's just say from 2015, now it's 2022, and you guys with your great hearts and expertise, okay, go up there and talk to the folks in Congress, okay? Have you seen a difference? Have you felt a difference? Really?
Yeah, so, you know, I've been in this field a long time. I'll say the stars are aligning more than usual recently. I want to say that the Special Education Legislative Summit is one of many efforts that we, our members, and our partners in the field do. But yeah, I would say I've seen some pretty remarkable differences recently. For example, the last 2 years, the funding requests that we've put forward are the same ones that we're seeing the administration also support and the House and the Senate. That's really huge. That's a really, I think, important step. I'll say, you know, we were on the Hill last week, so were the school superintendents. They were also making those same appropriations requests around IDEA.
Perfect.
Yeah, this is really a collective effort. And we also, you know, the teacher shortages in particular are getting a lot of attention. The House Appropriations Committee actually held a special hearing to examine that issue. So we're seeing a lot of attention being paid to our issues, which I think is a really big step in terms of progress.
Yeah, and actually, you accidentally segued into what I was going to ask you next. I know your advocacy of what we're talking about is going up into the feds, okay, and talk to the federal government, all three of you. But I'm curious, and I know this for a fact, when you ask superintendents, okay, what the most important thing they need right now, besides teachers and warm bodies and they're trained, okay, they always say social-emotional learning. That seems to be on every survey. Okay, and I'm curious, and I know social emotional learning fits into this, but I'm curious, does special ed need advocacy, okay, at the district level? Are the superintendents, et cetera, online to really get everything they need for special ed? And who wants to answer that one? Kuna, do you want to do that one, or you want Sharon to do it? Whoever you want to do it. Kuna, I'll throw it to you,
and you can throw it to
whoever. Yeah.
You know, I'm a co-chair of the IDEA Full Funding Coalition. It's a federal coalition that as its name indicates, is pushing for full funding of IDEA. But one of my co-chairs is actually the Superintendents Association, and they'll say, you know, if we had one thing we could get done this year in Congress, it would be to, you know, increase the federal share of IDEA. So this is something that they very strongly support. Yeah.
Good.
And I can pass to others.
Yes. I mean, do you want to say anything more on that, Sharon? Are you finding that, like, early childhood work in special education is enough advocacy at the district level? Sharon?
Thanks, Larry. I think the point that I might add to this part of the conversation is that we all stay focused. I think the three of us in particular talk about this a lot, that children are children first. And so whether they're a middle school student or they're a preschool student or they're a six-month-old, they are they receive general education first. And so that's why we advocate so closely with at the community level. And at the school age level, of course, that's superintendents and school boards and teachers associations. But at the early childhood level, I want to just expand the conversation a little bit to say at the early childhood level, that becomes pre-K, Head Start, child care, because for children birth to five, that's their environment. That's where they are in their communities every day. So we spend a lot of time, as Kuna and Caitlin have both said, in partnerships, but those partnerships are broader than you might think, not just general ed, but expand to some community agencies, particularly Head Start, Child Care, and Pre-K. So that, I think that might, I don't know if Caitlin wants to add to that concept, but I think that to me makes the partnership complete if we focus on the fact that these are all children and students first before we focus on their disability.
Thanks, Sharon. And Caitlin, I have two questions for you. Question one is, in the lunchroom, do the three of you sit at the same table? That's first of all.
I wish we were always in the same lunchroom.
You seem to work together so well. You know, mean girls, sitting there. Okay, making fun of everyone. No, I'm only kidding. Okay. Hey, Caitlin, talk about the higher ed side of this, or somehow how this fits in the higher ed. And I am curious about something. I work closely with a great little college in Putney, Vermont, which is for kids who learn differently. It's Landmark College. Okay. And I'm curious, you know, you're the higher ed consortium, and I'm just curious, special ed kids go to college. Okay. They really do. And they do well. Okay. With the right program. How we do it? Do you deal with that at all? Caitlin, the programs for kids with special needs. Yeah.
Before Kate answers that question, I just want you to know I'm from Putney, Vermont.
You're kipped. That cuts the population in half.
Well, actually, 2,000 people are from.
Oh, okay. I should talk. I live in a town of 1,200 in Maine. Okay, but I love Putney. It's a beautiful little town, right by Brattleboro. Everybody, wow! You're kidding. Who said that? Was that Sharon or Kuda?
Kuna.
You're from Putney?
Okay, and it is a cute little town. All right, it's but adorable. I don't want to take away from the conversation, Kate.
Absolutely. You're the only Putneyite outside of Landmark I ever met. Congratulations. Wow. Cool. There you go. Caitlin, you can't top that. But tell me, higher ed for kids with special ed. Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead.
I can't pause that, and I was going to kick it over to Kuna before I answered it, so I'm glad she jumped in. But I work peripherally. In my role with the Higher Education Consortium, I work peripherally on that, but I have in other avenues been a part of programs for students with disabilities within higher education programs that have provided additional support. I think that, you know, the one area is that our students who receive special ed services throughout their, you know, PK-12 or PK-21, you know, duration is that they're going into different fields, right? So they might be in the school of business wherever. And the folks in the higher ed faculty there may not have the training necessary support.
Yeah.
So that's something that, you know, I think moving forward, it would be great to see institutions of higher ed partner, you know, more closely with their departments of special education to, you know, increase training for all faculty and staff to make sure that those institutions of higher ed can be as inclusive as possible for all learners. And just in general, it would be good practice for folks, whether that's a student who had received, you know, special ed services or not.
Right. I couldn't agree with you more. We can't let kids, they get into higher ed and we have to make sure they succeed. They are as intelligent as anybody else. Okay. They just have special needs in their learning. All right. And the way we teach them, that's what it is. Okay. And, you know, so we can make that happen. Ladies, we got to go, but you three are wonderful. Caitlin and Sharon from, I assume Oz, and then Kuna from Putney. This is incredible. Putney, Vermont.
Thank you so much.
This was just great, and I got to tell you, all three of you and the group you put together, they did a great job in D.C. And I just hope that continues, and I wish you the best of luck with everything you're doing. We're always here to support you. So thank you, ladies, for everything.
Thank you.
Thanks so much, Larry.
You're welcome. You guys take care. Have a good rest of the summer. We'll talk again, I hope. Thank you all. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye. Okay, everybody. That's the Mean Girls table at the lunchroom. They're wonderful people. Okay, that's Kuna Tavlin, Sharon Walsh, and Caitlin Brennan, who sit together in the CEC lunchroom, I assume. Okay, Council for Exceptional Children. Okay, please go over there. It's exceptionalchildren.org. Okay, I'm pretty sure that's the website, but please go over. You know, and this affects every school. This affects every teacher. All right, it's not just, kids are, we got to do something about this, okay? And it's always a challenge. Like I said at the beginning, they mandate stuff and then they don't give them the money to fund it. Okay, it's unbelievable. All right, so, and we need teachers, okay, like we do everywhere. All right, please go over to ace-ed.org. Everything's with the icons. You can check out everything we do over there, including our magazine, which you just click on the cover for that. I'm Larry Jacobs. Thanks for listening.